comparison.
Hey, guys, we have a new sponsor, AvidGamerWear.com. It's a video game apparel company. It's a new brand starting out for video game players. We all play video games, don't we, Aaron?
That's right.
That's what we do when we're not on the mat. We have a controller in our hand, and the guys at AvidGamerWear are super cool dudes. Hit them up at AvidGamerWear.com and let them know that the Jiu-Jitsu Geeks sent you.
Thanks for the sponsorship, guys.
Just to let you guys know, Hansel Grace loves the Jiu-Jitsu Geeks. Extending control. A buckle and bump,
redirect your force. Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Jiu-Jitsu Geeks podcast. My name's Brian. With me, as always, or at least most of the time, is my co-host, E.T.
Hey, what's up, Brian? How are you doing?
Good. We are once again missing our friend Aaron Barr today. He wasn't with us for the last podcast. He's not here today either, unfortunately. He was supposed to be here in last minute, had something come up.
So this is strike two.
Strike two. This is serious business, Aaron. So
this is a verbal warning, man.
next one's termination. ET's going to cover that, though. So anyways, I got a special guest with us today, Bellator MMA fighter JJ Ambrose. Welcome to the show, JJ.
Hey, thanks a lot, guys. Appreciate you guys having me.
No problem. Thanks so much for agreeing to talk with us. Just to give the listeners an idea, it's 1:30 here our time. You are on the West Coast, right? Where are you located now?
Oh, I'm up in Santa Clara, California.
Santa Clara, okay. So it's what, 10:30, 10:40 there your time?
Yeah, just about.
Okay, cool, man. What is that near? What city is that near?
It's part of San Jose, actually.
San Jose. Okay. So where do you train at now? Because when I got in contact with you to see if you were interested in doing the podcast, I thought you were still at you were out of Phuket Top Team for a while.
Right.
Where are you training now?
So I train primarily at Gorilla Jiu-Jitsu in San Jose.
Okay. Okay. So you're under Dave Camarillo out there.
Yeah, Dave and Matt Darcy. It's one of his black belts.
Okay, okay. What's the training like there? Dave is a super high level guy. Comes from a good judo background and a good jiu-jitsu background too. How's the training there? Any different from how does it differ from maybe training that you've gotten elsewhere in your jiu-jitsu career?
Yeah, so this is like one of those really easy questions to ask or to answer. Dave's like kind of a bit of a philosopher,
mm-hmm.
So he always opens up your mind to new ideas and stuff. But the one thing that I've noticed is like when you walk into any given academy, it'll be, okay, guys, tonight we're going to drill arm bars, mm-hmm. Or, you know, we're going to drill something, drill some kind of like basic move. It could be an advanced move, that's fine, but when Dave or Matt walks out of the room, they're like, hey, I saw this amazing, Ferrampolo or, De La Riva or something at the tournament, and these guys were smashing people with it. Mm-hmm. So I want to go ahead and I want to, work on, a little workshop on how to shut those down.
Okay.
So Dave and Matt are always thinking tournament-based. Mm-hmm. They're thinking, how are we going to get an edge on the guys that are doing, all the newest tricks, 10 years ago, the rubber guard.
Mm-hmm.
It was like in class with how to shut that down.
Mm-hmm.
So it's Gorilla is highly competitive. It's one of those schools that is always wanting to get an edge on the competition, basically.
Okay.
And I think that's really cool.
Yeah.
It keeps your mind pretty sharp,
Uh-huh. That's cool. So he'll just take a position. We took a who was the seminar with? Nino?
Nino Shembri.
Yeah, we got a interview with Nino Shembri after a seminar we took with him, I guess a year and a half ago, and he didn't show too many. He showed some techniques, obviously, but he went into a lot of the philosophy. It sounded like a lot of concept based things. Is that sort of what you're talking about? Because we really enjoyed that. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's there's a million variations on an armbar and triangle setup.
Mm-hmm.
But it realistically comes down to the ones that work, and that's where I'm at. I've learned so much filler over the years, and I know it's necessary because some guys excel at MMA, you know, like, I'm using very, like, limited amounts of moves and fights. You know, I want to do the ones that are most effective that put me in best position to strike from or to finish with a submission. So, I really enjoy that kind of that style of teaching.
Are you still training in the gi? Do you do a lot of gi training opposed to no gi training?
Absolutely. Like, it's really unfortunate because I'm not as good at it. I didn't come up in a gi. You know, I just started putting it on a couple of years ago. And to this day, I'm still not comfortable in it. So, it's the worst thing in the world when I have to put it on. And, you know, spar guys that I think that I would just smash without the gi on. But it's like really humbling, I guess. It's like putting a straitjacket on for myself. And, you know, I think it makes me better because I really have to think before I do things. Where I know gi, you know, you use a lot of athleticism. It's like the anti-technique almost.
Sure, it's fast, much faster pace. You can maybe squirm out of stuff or slide out of stuff once you're real slippery. Yeah.
Well, JJ, let's go to the beginning of how you started training in martial arts and what led to your career in mixed martial arts. Do you mind taking us back to that?
Yeah, sure. So I've been wrestling since I was in my sixth grade.
Okay.
It was just a thing to do, you know. I wasn't really into football or soccer or anything that kids are usually into. So I was wrestling, and then when I got into high school, I wanted to box. So I boxed and I wrestled. And then my senior year of high school, this blue belt under Cesar Gracie came to my gym and was wanting to teach jiu-jitsu. And I was like, yeah, I'll do it. So I was just rolling around with him for a while. And coming from a wrestling background, I'm like, he was like 60 years old, you know. I mean, I was just smashing him.
Sure.
But I'm not bragging about it. I'm just saying that, like,
That was the
feeling that I was at. I was already, you know, hitting my head on it. So
yeah,
I wasn't going to go too much further there. But an MMA promoter from over the towns over came into my gym and asked if anybody wanted to do an MMA fight on the show coming up. You know, I raised my hand immediately. 2 weeks later, I had my first MMA fight in Lake Havasu and ended up winning by guillotine.
Oh, wow.
Like, yeah, it was just one of those situations where I was super lucky. It wasn't like I was super talented. It was just like, oh, you fought a guy that wasn't as good as you. That's cool.
Yeah.
Now you would never do
it. It was perfect.
Now you would never do a fight with 2 weeks training at this point in your career.
Yeah. Right. Uh-huh. Yeah, you know, that was 2005. It was just completely different. And not only that, like, back then, people were just now breaking into it. Like, it was just getting mainstream. That was when The Ultimate Fighter was coming on.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, so everybody and their mother wanted to jump in the ring right away. And, you know, no training, it didn't matter. It was just, oh, yeah, I want to fight. So, you know, that was pretty much my situation. I was just very fortunate to get matched up with a guy that was, you know, from a similar background.
Mm-hmm. Well, guillotine is a good, when we have wrestlers come in here, you always have to watch them snatching up your neck. That's a good wrestling, I guess, principle that seems to transfer over well to submissions. Yeah, for sure. So what, when did you decide to go professional with it? Or how long after your first fight did you take your next fight?
So I graduated high school and I moved to, Southern California, and I started training under, Antonio McKee. He was another good wrestler.
Mm-hmm.
This fight. And, he threw a show, like a couple times a year that I was able to jump in on. So it was like a couple months later that I actually had another fight.
Okay.
But, it was that first year I fought, like, it seemed like every other month, you know, at smaller shows. Like,
wow. Okay.
There was one in San Pedro called Cage Combat. It was really kind of like a humbling experience because I went there and I had, like, Toby Amata and Jake Shields were the main event.
Uh-huh.
And then, like, Tank Abbott was there. I mean, like, it was a funny story about Tank. Like, when I went to go shake his hand, like, I walked up to him, and I guess he was pissing on the front of a building.
Oh. Classic Tank.
Classic. That Tank Abbott.
Tank, right?
He's such a scoundrel. Yeah.
Yeah. That was a perfect situation.
Oh, man. So what made you decide to make the move out to Thailand and train out there?
Yes, when you're like the early 90s, everyone wanted to be like Van Damme. Everyone wanted to do the whole kickboxer thing. That was kind of something like I always held on to. Like,
sure.
I need to make jumps high when I need to do some stand up training. You know, just like if you want to be great at jiu-jitsu, you got to make it down to Brazil at some point. It's just, I don't know, it's part of the journey, you know, like the kung fu journey or whatever. So, you know, I wrote, the director of Tiger Muay Thai at the time was Ray Elby. I wrote him and asked if I could come out for a month, and, you know, he said, sure. And then, so I came out for a month, fell in love with the place, and they asked me if I would stay on and teach wrestling.
Okay.
I stayed with them for a year, and then there was a little bit of a falling out with Ray and the rest of Tiger, so, like, you know, loyalist, I guess. I left, and I went down the street. It was literally down the street. I mean, like, less than a mile away to get Top Team.
Yeah.
Like, these people that, like, were supposedly our rivals, and, like, we hated them for a year, and moved, you know. As soon as there was no ties to Tiger, I went right down the street.
Hey, guys, remember me? Yeah.
Yeah, basically.
Okay. Oh, so that was, you started at Tiger Muay Thai, is that right?
Yeah.
Okay. What's the jiu-jitsu scene like out there in Thailand?
It's kind of crazy right now. There's some really good black belts out there. I don't mean like competitive black belts. I just mean like, you know, like the, like third, fourth degree. At Taigun, there's Fernando Machichero, and, at Forget Top Team, Olavo Rio. Machichero is like a fourth degree, and Olavo is the guy that brought, jiu-jitsu to Abu Dhabi way back with, Brazilian Top Team guys.
Okay.
Back in the day.
Wow.
So it's kind of cool. There's a lot of knowledge over there. Like a lot of low level guys go. Like it seems like there's tons of Russians and Australians that are always coming through. There's a constant influx of new training partners every month.
Okay.
Because all the guys that go there, they stay there for short term. It's like a vacation, like a holiday or something.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's not a whole lot of long termers. So you'll get like, no, you'll get like 100 new people to train with every month.
Wow.
Yeah, so it's kind of like, it's like a traveling gym that doesn't move.
Yeah. It's like there's a revolving door. Cool. Yeah.
And that's Phuket Island.
What's that?
Was that Phuket Island where that was the Tiger?
Oh no, Phuket Island is like it's like a tourist trap kind of.
Yeah.
Phuket is like the really big island. Then TV Island is kind of like a Vegas.
Oh, okay, you know, okay.
Yeah.
So what's your jiu-jitsu training schedule look like most weeks? Like, are you doing half in the gi, half without? How many times a day are you training? Things like that.
It's really funny because at Gorilla, there's like maybe one session a week that they do no gi. So, like, I'm asking, like, anywhere, like, any gym, like, hey, is there, like, an open mat or a marathon roll where you guys do no gi?
Yeah.
And no one ever has one. Dave's Academy, he has a black belt named Justin Seidel that I wrote him and I asked him if he would roll no gi with me. And so, like, he got a couple other guys, James Terry, fight for us, fight for us, I don't know if you know that guy.
Right.
So we just started doing like no gi at 12 almost every day for, you know, the last few weeks.
Okay.
So like it's much further commute for me, but man, sometimes like it's just nice to get back to your roots, I guess I'll call it that. But I still do all my technique sessions and, you know, with a gi on.
Well, you know, looking at your record, the majority of your wins come by submission. Would you call yourself a submission fighter, JJ? Or I know you have some knockout wins also.
I would call myself an opportunist.
There you go.
You know, like, it's funny, like, when you go for, like, knockouts and stuff, it never happens. Like, there's been times where, like, I feel like I crack guys and nothing. But then there's the ones that, like, barely touched them, I felt. And then it was like, you know, that feeling when you hit a baseball out of the park or something.
Right.
But you don't even notice. So, what I'm getting at is that, like, going for a submission, like, you're going in with a purpose. Like, when you get a knockout, though, it's just, like, an accident.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Yeah, I guess that's true.
Guy, I was surprised that it happened.
Mm-hmm. It's like you don't know which punch is going to be the one that does it, but you know, oh, I get this rear naked. I know exactly what's going to
happen. I know exactly
what's
going to happen, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, you go on with a purpose when it's like a first submission, but knockouts, they just happen naturally.
Yeah, that's a good point. So do you think training in the gi has helped your MMA jiu-jitsu at all, or do you kind of view them as two different sort of things?
I mean, it is two different games, but at the same time, I have had to slow my game down and learn techniques. So it's been good for me.
Mm-hmm.
I'm so much better without the gi on, but like, I swear it feels like I'm wearing like a I don't know if you guys watched Dragon Ball Z, but Goku used to wear like a training outfit.
Yeah.
That like weighed him down and took his power level down. Mm-hmm. I feel the same way when I put a gi on.
So really?
It's cool.
Uh-huh. Right.
It helps me.
Brian's eyes just lit up when you said Dragon Ball Z, JJ. So yeah,
nerd alert.
Nerds.
Yeah.
I get a lot of those moments lately.
I have a question for you. You've trained, or you competed with Bellator, Affliction, and you tried out for the Ultimate Fighter show. What do you, of the three organizations, who's the best run behind the scenes? Who would you say has the best production?
Oh man, that's really hard. Like, Affliction was cool. It was like, it wasn't corporate in a way, you know? It was like real, like, oh, Dandy said, what do you think? But then it'd be like leveling with me if it was possible or not, you know?
Right.
So, I mean, that was cool. It was real personal. Like, it was kind of a cool situation back in the day. I used to train, at the Affliction, it's not like it was an academy or anything, but it was like their warehouse where they like distributed all the shirts and stuff.
Right.
Like their main warehouse. So I would train like the owners, like, you know, like kickboxing and stuff or jiu-jitsu, whatever they wanted to do at that time. So like I knew everybody, you know, I trained with Tom, you know, Tom was far with me, you know, it was kind of a cool situation, like, you know, like your own backyard.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say Affliction was like the best run in that sense, but I mean that's completely biased because I liked all those people. You know, they're like it would be like as if Dana White was your best friend,
right?
Mm-hmm. Right. So
I miss Affliction. I wish they could have found a way to keep going because I like their I like their shows.
Yeah, it was cool, and they were trying to make all these dream fights happen. You know, like Tour and Fedor. I mean, that would have been cool.
Yeah.
It was a good situation. Like, they had everybody that wasn't in the UFC, basically.
Right.
And you know, they really opened up their walls, too. Like, man, I remember some of the checks those guys were getting. I was like, damn, you know. So, mm-hmm. It was cool. They didn't care. It was, like, money wasn't an option. So it was, like, it was very pride-esque.
Right. Yeah. Well, now you're with Bellator. Correct. How did you get associated with Bellator?
I was over in Thailand, and I mean, it was real simple. They wrote me and asked me if I wanted to be on the next lightweight tournament. And no, I'm not going to say no.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a great opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was an easy situation.
What? How is your getting a little bit more into the MMA training? How is your week split up as far as like Monday through Friday or whatever days you train, what's your training schedule look like? Do you do specific, okay, 9 to 10:30, I do wrestling, and then from this time to this time, I work on boxing? And how is it split up? I'm interested to know.
So, like, for me, like, it used to be that I would train some kind of martial art twice a day.
Mm-hmm.
And I noticed, like, I was far 3 or 4 times a week, and I'd always be jacked up. Like, I'd always be sore from, mm-hmm. like, you know, like all the leg kicks and stuff.
Yeah.
I'd basically all beat up, and I'd be going home with a headache most of the time. And so the next training session would suck.
Yeah.
It was like, I wouldn't be able to get so much out of it. It'd be more like I'm trying to get through it instead of get from it.
Mm-hmm.
So, again, that whole situation, like, I talked to a couple good trainers about that, and not MMA trainers, like strength and conditioning coaches.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I was basically blowing my wad on, like, the morning session and then the night 10 session. I was just trying to get through it.
Yeah.
So I kind of switched it up, and I started doing more strength and conditioning, like cardio-based stuff, metabolic, all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Like sprint training, like a sprint session, that's a training session.
Okay.
So then I would go home and rest until the evening when I could do another, like, MMA class or jiu-jitsu or something.
Okay.
So my weeks are basically split up, like, 5 days a week I'm doing some kind of conditioning, and then the five evenings I'll do like some kind of jiu-jitsu or stand up or wrestling. And the reason for that is just I'm not really getting like overloaded. At this point in my career, I'm not going to learn a ton more of like technique and stuff.
Yeah.
So I'm just kind of trying to slow it down and pick up like what I can from different people. Like Dave, he's got tons of stuff to teach. But at the end of the day, I don't need to learn how to do a flying triangle.
Sure,
you know? Right.
Just like it's just not like tailor made for me. There's certain bodies I'm never going to be able to do a rubber guard if my knees aren't flexible. You know, I'll probably dislocate it doing if I do that. So
right.
It's just not going to happen.
Uh-huh.
So, like I said, I'm just trying to pick up what I can. It's again a slower pace, basically. I'm just never going to learn that much more stuff at this point.
That's you're just trying to sharpen up what you already have, maybe work on some timing and things like that.
Sure. And another thing is like the fighting schedule. If I have a fight schedule, I really can't learn anything. Then it just becomes a waste. I have to drill over and over the same stuff,
uh-huh.
You know, for that opponent. That's where I think you get better is just from the drilling for that specific opponent. Because if I was to drill something else that didn't work, like if I'm fighting a black belt, you should do. I'm probably not going to be drilling. Flying triangles or flying arm bars and stuff, you know, if he's drilling how to shut his jiu-jitsu down.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So you're doing your strength and conditioning in the morning. Do you find that affects you at all in your evening sessions? Like maybe like it makes you use what well, we hear. We're big fans of Crone Gracie over here. And there's a thing online where he talks about you train till you're exhausted. And that's when you see what your technique is like, cause you have no strength to muscle through anything. Do you kind of view that as being the motivation behind why you do cardio every day or some sort of strength and conditioning every day and then do your MMA or martial arts training in the evening to kind of really sharpen up the technique?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, absolutely. I remember like a few years ago, the way that I would get in shape is, okay, let's spar. Let's up the intensity in sparring and let's just go as hard as we can until we quit. And then the next session would be the same situation.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a flaw in that, you know, it's like using the wrong tool for the job, basically. Like, there's better ways to get in shape. Like, if I were to tell you, hey, let's do a workout that's going to make us lose as much fat as possible,
mm-hmm.
it probably wouldn't be MMA training. If MMA training is much more fun than lifting weights or something, but there's a better way to lose fat than boxing or doing jiu-jitsu.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
There's more effective ways to get in shape,
mm-hmm.
is what I'm getting at, rather than beating your body down with sparring or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
That's the main thing that I've taken out of this. That, like, I just, you can't do MMA training all the time in order to get in shape.
Okay.
You will get in shape, don't get me wrong, but there are better ways to get in shape and still stay healthy and still stay able to fight. Like, when it comes fight time, it's whoever's less injured, you know?
Yeah.
That's another thing. You know?
Mm-hmm.
Is there a particular sports nutrition diet that you adhere to, JJ?
So, like, there's, like, a lot of different ones out there. Like, people are doing vegan and paleo and all that.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know enough about how to be a vegan. Like, maybe I might, maybe I would enjoy it. I mean, I doubt it. I love meat. But I'm just saying, like, I don't know enough about being a vegan, like, how to get, like, enough protein in my diet, mm-hmm. you know, without strain. Like, how do you even get protein without eating meat? You know, like, I don't even know how. Well, there's, like, they eat, like, a lot of beans and stuff, but mm-hmm. I wouldn't know the quantity and stuff. So I'm just not educated on that situation.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, Jake Shields, he grew up that way, so he knows exactly how his body works.
Mm-hmm.
But for me, like, I use, like, mostly, like, a paleo base. But paleo base, it just means that I don't eat anything that's processed. So if it comes in a box or a container, I'm probably not going to eat it.
Okay.
Processed. that if I can see like the vegetables or whatever protein I'm eating, then I'm probably going to eat it. But if it comes in a can or something, you know, it's no good.
Okay. Damn, I had a question. It just went right out of my mind.
Yeah.
Shit. What was it? supplements. I'm starting to start training a lot more now, and I noticed I've still got my – we trained an open mat at 11, and my fingers are still taped up from it. I just feel like my fingers are taking a beating, and overall, just in general, my body feels kind of worn down. What kind of supplements do you take, like any vitamins and minerals, anything that you think it's important for recovery or rebuilding?
Glutamine and my protein shake for the post-workout. I'm always drinking some kind of BCA, the branched amino acid.
Okay.
I take a multivitamin every morning.
Mm-hmm.
Fish oils. I mean, like all that stuff, that's like lubrication for your joints. I mean, you need that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
I just picked up a pretty cool sponsor. It's an upgraded coffee, that Bulletproof guy. Very fortunate to pick up that as a sponsor, and they send me MCT oil. It's like $50 a bottle, and I was paying that much. You know, I'm like, God dang it.
Yeah.
I mean, to me, it was just like really expensive coconut oil, but you know, like you notice the difference.
Okay.
But like all that stuff, just like lubrication, I think you need it. You know, otherwise you just get real achy.
Yeah, I listened to. Dave Asprey's been on Joe Rogan's podcast, and he has his own podcast too. I'm sure you know. He's got some interesting ideas. I definitely agree with some of it, and some of it I don't know, just like you with being vegan, I don't know the research behind it.
Yeah, absolutely. So I was dumb, and I read one of his blogs on it was MCT oil and chili powder. How when combined, it increases the thermogenics in your body.
Okay.
So being a jackass, I'm one of those guys that I will throw everything into my shake.
Oh boy.
Or coffee, so I drink cinnamon, like I'll put cinnamon in my coffee. But that's not a big deal. That's normal.
Yeah.
But you know that increases thermogenics, you know, fat burning and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So I threw chili powder in my coffee yesterday.
How'd that go?
Worst freaking steak I've ever made in my life. My stomach was just hurting all day long. It was rough. But, you know, I probably burned the bat.
Probably
running to the bathroom. Yeah.
That was just a stupid idea. But from now on, I'm real bare, like minimalist. I try to get everything I possibly can into like my protein shake in the morning. You know, like I'll blend spinach and stuff so that I don't have to eat it.
Right.
So,
right.
Just like little things like that. But you know, the chili powder was definitely a big regret.
Yeah.
Are you in training for anything right now, JJ?
So right now I'm waiting on a callback from there's this K1 show in Lithuania. So the promoter hit me up and we verbally agreed to opponent, and I'm just waiting for the opponent to say yes. I don't even know the guy's name. I looked him up on YouTube and I'm like, cool, I'll do it.
Yeah.
Dutch and Spill Lithuania.
Yeah.
Is this MMA or is it kickboxing?
No, K1. Great 3-minute rounds, though.
Oh, okay.
My whole situation is I will fight anybody for three-minute rounds, you know, whether it's indoor or Buakaw, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
3-minute rounds. Like, there's no way that I won't be in shape for that, you know, that amount of time.
Mm-hmm. You
know? So, it's good payday and it's a chance to go see Europe, you know?
Yeah.
So,
yeah, definitely.
Fun. The cool thing about it, it's K1. Like, no matter what, win or lose, it doesn't affect my career in any way. So I'm happy to do it.
Yeah, you fought in K1. That's a cool, interesting point, you know?
Right, yeah. I mean, it's just, my whole thing at this point is about just, not even like legacy, it's more of like just seeing the world, like doing as much as I can, like getting that experience.
Right.
Yeah, when you mentioned that, I just thought, I was like, oh yeah, that's kind of cool. Like, he gets to go on someone else's dime to Europe for a week or however long it's out there. Where's some of your favorite places that you've been since you started on this journey?
When I first got to Phuket, I was stoked on Phuket. Then, it became, like this tourist thing to me. Like, everybody went there. So it wasn't like I was in Thailand. It was more like I was in Hawaii.
Okay.
I don't know if that makes sense. there's not a whole lot of Thai culture in Phuket. It's more like, hey, what are the Westerners like? Let's do that. Let's try to make some money off Phuket.
Yeah.
So not a whole lot of culture there. But then I went to Bali in Indonesia.
Uh-huh.
It was like total opposite. Like, yeah, they were definitely trying to get our money, but there was like temples on every street corner, you know, like every house has its own like spirit temple. So like you walk through, like you'll see like a Starbucks on one corner and a massive like pagoda looking temple on the other side.
Sounds cool.
You know what I mean? So
yeah.
Like that's just like that was good, like a complete culture shock here, because usually a Starbucks is followed by McDonald's and a Target and a gas station.
Then another Starbucks.
And then another Starbucks, yeah.
Right,
and another Starbucks, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that was really cool for me, and, you know, the people were cool, and, you know, it was just like a real, like, surf culture. To be honest, I've never surfed a day in my life, but I was sitting in this vegan wellness, you know, food place, and I'm eating, drinking coffee, and this surfer guy walked up to me, he's like, bro, the 12 this morning, they're pretty good. actually, I just did yoga down the street, and he's like, hey, he gave me like this most bewildered look I've ever seen, and he walked away.
So, we all go to the same places, just different reasons.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Like, he blew his mind. So.
Well, let me ask you, JJ, when you're not training for MMA, what are you doing? What do you do to unwind and relax?
Lifestyle. I mean, I have my daughter, she's 4 years old, so I spend a lot of time with her and doing just obnoxious things with her that I never thought I would do, you know?
Yeah.
She hands me a toy, it'll be like a mermaid or something, and, you know, I'm a mermaid now, and so we're just playing and stuff. But the other night, I had some friends over, and I got this one, it's like Dungeons & Dragons, a board game.
Oh, yes.
Anyway, so I had three friends over, and we played Dungeons & Dragons. It was still like 3 o'clock in the morning. It was terrible.
JJ, you're talking to a D&D player right here. So it's.
Dude, I have a million questions for you.
Oh, boy. I'm going to leave you two alone.
No worries, man.
Some of the things we would just get lost sometimes, like when the card, it said, you know, pass to the player on your right, and then it goes on perpetually. We were like, oh, we're in trouble.
Well, the cool thing is, look, if you understand combat in real life and you can bring that into your fantasy role-playing, right now everybody's turning off their podcast. So, but let me tell you, your imagination for that game is probably way better than anybody else's, you know, because of your real-life experiences.
Oh, for sure. I mean, it was a lot of fun. It's cool. I mean, we put on, like, masks. Something like I had like a wizard's hat on. It was cool. I enjoyed it.
Yeah, good times.
Yeah. You know, I recently, like, I read this blog one morning by Martin Rooney, and he said, "When's it okay to quit?" And he just listed like things like, "Oh, well, it's, in American culture, it's not okay to quit." But then, what about smoking? What about video games and stuff? Yeah, and, like, it hit me right, like, you know, like a sack of potatoes. Damn it. I was up till like 5 o'clock in the morning playing like Dragon Age or something, you know.
Oh yes, and great game.
Training stuck that morning because of it.
Yeah.
So I was like, "Can I do this?" So like, I got rid of all my video games, like on the spot. So that has been kind of like a culture shock for me lately, like finding things to do. So I've just been doing a lot more reading and writing and stuff.
Yeah, you know, Brian will tell you, I'm a big video game player. I got a company revolved around video games outside of here. And you definitely have to make a decision on what lifestyle you want. Do you want to do the sit down in front of a console with a controller in your hand, or do you want to get on the mat and shrimp up and down? You got to see what you want more. You know, that's kind of where I am right now, JJ. And I know with you, if your paycheck comes from fighting, that's a hard, it's I guess, an easier decision for you to give that up. You know, we give up the extracurriculars.
Yeah, it's real rough, and especially when you got training in the morning. Like, I'm not the guy that'll be like, oh, let's just take the day off. No, you know, like, I'm stupid. I just don't go.
Yeah.
But, you know, then I suck. So that's the worst situation ever. So for me, it was like, until I can get this video game habit under control, I'm going to quit for a while.
Yeah, I understand. Hey, I'm going to send you out a shirt for my company, okay? I'm going to send you out. So let me after this, we'll get your I'll get your mailing address, okay?
Sure.
Yeah.
All right, nerds. Circling back around. JJ, are you? We'll wrap up here in a minute. But are you going to keep training in the gi and try to get that black belt, or how does that work like in MMA environments? Like, do guys just train jiu-jitsu and don't really? They don't ever touch a gi, and therefore they don't ever really have an official rank? Or how does that work?
So my coach, Tracy Hess, he also works for Affliction. He's a black belt under Chris Brennan.
Mm-hmm.
And Chris Brennan primarily does no-gi. So he does give the no-gi belt out.
Okay.
So technically I'm a brown belt in no-gi jiu-jitsu. Okay. I don't know where that ranks me in Brazilian jiu-jitsu. Dave always just has me wear my brown belt. Mm-hmm. But to me, like, if I put a gi on, I have a blue belt on.
Right.
Really?
In my head. Yeah, in my head.
Okay.
Right.
So, okay. Huh.
Yeah. For sure. Like, I mean, obviously, like, I'm smashing guys with a blue belt on, but, I mean, realistically, I don't know as much technique as, you know, half, you know, like, because a purple belt, there's no way. Like, I don't know how to do a lapel choke. So, I mean, there's lots of things like that, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Do you
take the gi off, and I know all kinds of cool stuff.
Yeah.
Right.
Do you compete at all in just primarily grappling? Like, you do any tournaments out there or anything?
Yeah, absolutely. The last one I did was in SoCal in Orange County. It was a Subfighter Open. I don't know. Anyway.
Okay.
So I won that one pretty good. It was pretty easy.
Oh, all right.
What did you enter?
Like the whole rest, what's that?
Which division do you enter when you enter in, because being a professional fighter?
Advanced. I don't believe in the whole sandbagging thing, guys, with a bill.
Thank you.
They'll say, like, well, good. I've been training for 5 years, but I took that 1 year off, and I took that 6 months off. Like, no, man, you've been training for 5 years. Stop it.
Yeah.
Yeah, thank you for that.
Mm-hmm. You're an honorable man. Yeah.
It's just ridiculous. Like, why would you want to win a white belt tournament as a blue belt? It doesn't make any sense.
No honor in that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, since day one, like, I don't want to beat up white belts. I want to find the black belt in the room, and I want to beat that guy up.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. No, and if I don't, I'm going to go home, and I'm going to figure out a way to beat him.
Yeah, that's good. Always improving, using your losses to help you improve.
That's the nature of competition. I mean, you don't want to fight the guy that is lower than you. I mean, to look good, you want to fight the guy that's better than you, and that's an accomplishment. I think the whole thing is people want accolades. They want the trophy. They want the medal.
Yeah,
right.
It's realistic, but it comes down to it. Like, you're sitting there with a gold medal that you won, but did you really earn that medal? I mean, it's just kind of like a joke to me.
Yeah, it's easy to show somebody that and not give them the story behind it, you know?
Yeah, for sure. That's
exactly. There's a story behind every medal. Like, if I look at a trophy and I didn't earn it, I'm probably getting rid of that thing.
Right, right.
Yeah.
You probably don't believe in participation trophies and medals either, do you, JJ?
No, hell no. Okay, from the age of, like, 3 to 10, you should definitely get the participation. But after that, you should not get a trophy for anything else.
Yeah.
You know, like, this whole mentality we started with, oh, just give it your best shot. Oh, bullshit, man. Go out there and beat that guy.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Well, I've got some trophies I got to throw away at home now, guys. You're bursting my bubble for real.
I've seen people like post pictures on Facebook and Instagram where they lost to get second place, meaning like there was only two people in the division and they lost. They got a silver medal. Like, dude, you don't keep that medal. You throw that away.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like you see that, and then you see the guy at the Pan Ams in the blue belt division that had to fight 9 times and lost once and then got a silver medal. So they're both silver medalists, just one's a lot different the other.
Different caliber of silver medals.
Yeah,
that guy earned that silver medal. You know, he busted his ass for that thing. There's a complete difference.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's just my belief. Like, I know, to each his own, but in my head, I just want an accomplishment. I don't want any accolades. I don't care about that stuff.
And it's just good to hear somebody, a professional fighter like yourself, say it, get it out there, because there's a lot of people that don't have that philosophy in their life.
Yeah, they just want the pat on the back. They want the new belt or the the medal or trophy or whatever. They don't want to have to go through the grind to get it.
Well, you know, that shit transfers into your professional life, too. I mean, how do you get a promotion at work? If you believe in that on the jiu-jitsu matter, the jiu-jitsu scene, you're probably a shitty husband or a shitty employee, you mm-hmm. know? I mean, that's indicative of your mindset and your lifestyle.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Well, JJ, this has been an awesome conversation, dude. Thank you so much for talking to us, man.
Yeah, we're gonna wrap this up, JJ, but stay on the line for a second. I want to get some info from you, okay?
Okay, cool.
So let's wrap this up.
All right. Guys, that's been our talk with JJ Ambrose. Hope you enjoyed it.
Yeah, this was really fun.
This was a lot of fun. So until next time, I'm Brian.
This is ET.
And we'll see you later. Bye.
Thank you.